There have been exciting things afoot in our solar system recently, and there are yet more to come in the coming month. But if our own cosmic backyard wasn't interesting enough, researchers now have found a way to see the very first stars. To find out more, I spoke to Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society.
Well, I think one of the exciting results we've had this month is from a meeting we sponsored up in Liverpool. It's a conference on extreme events in the universe, so in itself, I guess what you might call the high-end stuff in astronomy. And one of the stories coming out of that is from a group, an international group, that are led by an Israeli scientist, and they've worked out a method, they think anyway, of trying to understand or trying to get an indirect detection of the very first stars in the universe. Now, I should stress that nobody's done this before. We're building telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope that will try to look for these objects, but it's difficult because if you're looking back that far in time, I suppose the infill explanation you need here is that if you're looking a long way, then you're looking back in time because it takes light a long time to get to you, and so in theory you can see a long way back towards the Big Bang. And the context then is that the first 1% of time after the Big Bang is within a couple hundred million years. Now, that's much, much younger than anybody's managed to detect in that way before. We get sort of an understanding about the residual heat of the universe, what's called the microwave background, which is the heat of the Big Bang that's distributed across the cosmos. But we've never managed to look at the first stars. And so I think, although this is a kind of predictive result, what they're saying is that they can use radio telescopes to look at particular emission from these objects. It's a very significant one.
So why is it that these first stars in particular are interesting? There's obviously a lot that we could learn about the very early universe, but why the stars themselves?
The best idea about the first stars in the universe is that they're actually quite different to the ones we see today. And the reason is that there were far less of what astronomers called metals around. It's a funny definition. In astronomy, a metal is anything heavier than helium. So you have hydrogen and helium, and every other element, every other compound is effectively a metal. It's just a definition because hydrogen and helium dominate the matter that we can see. And the very first stars are thought to have come into being with very, very low amounts of that, just the stuff that was formed in the Big Bang, which is a little bit of beryllium, a little bit of lithium, and not much else. So their chemistry is completely different. The way they run their nuclear reactions is thought to be quite different as well. A lot of them may well have been a great deal brighter and more luminous than anything we see today. And it gives us actually an insight into the earliest epoch in the cosmos. It tells us, you know, from that we can kind of trace the entire history of the universe from that point onwards. And so that's why it's a really significant result. Now, the group are quite, and they're acknowledging it's indirect. They said, look, you won't be able to see these stars individually or anything like that, and it may be decades and decades before we have telescopes that can do that kind of thing. But it is the first time that there's been a serious method to try and think about how we can detect the radiation from them and distinguish it and actually think about where galaxies clump together, where these stars are found, where the dark matter was at that point. So it is actually quite a big step forward.
So what is it that they're actually doing, and what is it that's the novel step in that? What's new about it?
Well, I mean, firstly, it's one of the few ways that we can think of to find these stars. You know, there are very few telescopes at the moment could come close to doing that, and nothing really on the horizon, although the James Webb Telescope will try to see the first galaxies. But the novel idea is they're going to use 21-centimeter radio emission. Now, we measure the characteristic of electromagnetic radiation, which includes light and ultraviolet light, X-rays, infrared and radio waves, and we do that by giving it a wavelength. That's one of its key characteristics. 21 centimeters is quite long. I mean, that's many millions of times longer than the wavelength of light, and so you need large radio telescopes to detect it and to get any kind of resolution. And their idea is that this particular emission will tell them something about these stars, that they think they can detect this kind of web of stars in the very early universe using this. Now, nobody's done it yet. What they're basically doing is almost like a call to arms. They're saying that some telescope arrays are being built that would detect these stars, and they're really sort of saying, look, this is something you can go and use them to do.
So that's going to presumably go on to the science mission of things like the SKA, which we've also heard this month. It now has a site, in fact, has two sites.
Exactly. It's you know, any kind of future radio astronomers will be looking at this and thinking, I hope so anyway, looking at it and thinking, this is some of the exciting science we can do with the coming generation of telescopes. And just as we're progressing in the optical with the European Extremely Large Telescope. We're building the Square Kilometre Array. We're building the Low Frequency Array, LOFAR, across Europe. These are the kind of targets those telescopes will be looking at.
And from cutting edge, incredibly distant, very interesting new science, bringing it right into our own backyard, Jupiter's going to be doing something exciting this month.
Yeah, on the 15th of July, Jupiter is going to be occulted by the Moon. Now, an occultation is just when one object moves in front of another. So in this case, the Moon is much closer to the Earth than Jupiter is. That's a good thing for a whole host of reasons, but it's going to block out the light of Jupiter. So Jupiter will appear to slide behind it as the Moon moves in front of it. Now, what's nice about this in the UK is that you will see, if you've got a decent small telescope or possibly even a good pair of binoculars, you can see Jupiter and its four bright moons, the ones discovered or at least understood by Galileo, sliding behind the planet. So it could be quite a spectacular event. If you've got a small telescope, it's very easy to see that Jupiter is a big world rather than a star, and set against the lunar landscape in the foreground, it really could be something to look out for. The bad news is that it's going to take place at around 2 o'clock in the morning, but it is a Sunday, so you know, at least you don't have to go to work. Most of us anyway don't have to go to work in the morning.
So very interesting for amateur astronomers to be able to see something they otherwise wouldn't be able to see. Is this sort of event useful for researchers, for scientists as well?
And what you can do, well, with stars being occulted by the Moon, you can use it as a technique to effectively survey the edge of the Moon, because they're point sources and you can see when they blink in and out, if they just go in what's called a graze, when they just run along the edge of the Moon as it moves past. In this case, it's slightly harder because the moons are all obviously not point sources. You know, they're close enough that we can see them as disks in some cases. So it's slightly more complicated to do that kind of thing. But I think my best prediction on this is there'll just be some spectacular pictures of it happening. And the nice thing is that the southeast of England is quite well placed for it. The graze, which is probably the most spectacular bit, sort of runs roughly in a line down from the Wash down towards Bristol in the southwest.
And another spectacular event in our own backyard, and this time one that won't be seen again in our lifetime, you managed to catch a glimpse of the transit of Venus.
I was one of the few people, I think, in the UK that managed to do this. I got up at an unearthly hour, drove up to the Cotswolds, to a site up there near Cheltenham, Cleeve Common. And I have to say, I think it felt pretty bleak at 4 a.m., but the sun rose. We couldn't see the sun because it was behind a thick wall of cloud, but then we were lucky enough that literally probably for about 1 minute and then for maybe another 10 seconds, the sun poked out, had a telescope with a solar filter on, pointing the right direction. So I and a few people with me managed to see it. I think they're looking at the pictures I've seen, I'm guessing it can't be more than about 200 people around the UK that did this. So I feel quite pleased, because having seen the one in 2004 and knowing that the next one isn't until 2117, it's one of those things you try not to miss.
And to ask the same question about Venus as I did about Jupiter, what is it that we can actually learn from watching that happen, beyond it just being a spectacular thing to see?
The transit of Venus is a kind of test bed for transits of worlds around other stars. There's the best example of a contemporary science mission is the Kepler Observatory, which is currently in space looking at the same patch of sky, monitoring something like a couple of 100,000 stars and looking for these kind of events. If you imagine a star with a world going round it and that world passes between the star and the Earth, then the light of the star will appear to dip down a little bit because it blocks some of it. What watching the transit of Venus allows you to do is to calibrate your instruments to understand what a planet the size of the Earth looks like moving in front of a star. Now, I should stress that Venus is not like the Earth. You know, it's an incredibly hostile world, close to the sun and very hot and so on. But the one thing it does have in common is that it's the same size, and that makes it a nice test bed. So astronomers who are interested in looking at transits of planets around other stars like to look at events in our own solar system to test the way their instruments work.
Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society.